You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at sevillepodcast.com. Now available through email, sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Gould. In this podcast, UVA Athletics Director Craig Littlepage speaks on the role of intercollegiate athletics and teaching and learning at Wednesday's meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. Littlepage is a member of the Associate Faculty for the University Center for Alcohol and Substance Education and participates in various alcohol and drug education conferences. He has served on the board of directors of the Ronald McDonald House and is a trustee for the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Mr. Littlepage spoke at the Wednesday, March 14, 2012 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Charlottesville Senior Center. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by SSV board member Charlie Smith.
Well, I think I've got some notes here, but I'm not going to read them all. First of all, I'm going to tell you about one thing. The gentleman who's going to speak to us today, I've known since about 1976, I think. You came here and you were the same year that the University of Virginia's basketball team won the ACC tournament at Landover, Maryland. And that was a great year, and you're marked by having a part of the basketball system for many of your years after that. And then you went away again, you came back to Charlottesville, and now you've been here since, 1980? 88. And in the last 10 or 11 years, you've been the athletic director for the University of Virginia, having served as an associate director about 10 years before that. So you've got a long experience in your business at the University of Virginia. And he was my boss at one time. In my latter years of PA announcing and for the football and basketball teams, I had great association with this man whom I consider to be one of the greatest assets, especially in the realm of athletic directorship that the university's ever had. And I've known him all the way back to when I was a kid. 80, well, how many years ago was that? So to make a long story short, I'm going to read a small biography about, just a brief biography. You were born in Lamont, Pennsylvania, as I recall it. And you've got, I don't know how many kids, let's see. Married to the former Margaret Murray of Charlottesville, Virginia. And you have three kids, two girls and a son, right? And he's got a BS in economics from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Now, that's not a bad background to have for a guy who's going to be athletic director of a very strong American college. And his coaching experience, he was assistant basketball coach at Villanova, assistant basketball coach at Yale University, assistant basketball coach at the University of Virginia, that's that 76 to 82 period, head basketball coach of the University of Pennsylvania from 82 to 85, head basketball coach of Rutgers University, 85 to 88, assistant basketball coach, University of Virginia, 1988 to 1990. He's been the assistant athletics director at the University of Virginia from 1990 to 91, associate athletics director for programs, University of Virginia, 91 to 95, senior associate director of athletics, University of Virginia, 95 to 01, named the athletics director at the University of Virginia August 21st, 2001. So you've got 11 years of it. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you a gentleman who's going to speak to you and think essentially about responsibilities that the athletic department and the athletics, he as athletic director in particular, have in relation to the community, to the college, and to the people of Virginia. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charlie. I actually don't need the microphone, but I've got my coach's voice going. And the allergies have kicked in a little bit. Anybody dealing with allergies? It's pretty nasty over the past couple days. But if this microphone's too loud, I'll just go back to the coaching voice. We'll turn that off. It's a thrill to be here and to see so many friendly faces and to have the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about the athletics program at your university, the University of Virginia. Let me preface my remarks by telling you why I think this is such an important topic for not only me as the athletics director, but for every one of our coaches, head coaches and assistant coaches, as well as other staff at the University of Virginia, to be conversant upon. You only need to read the newspapers, listen to your radio, watch the TV, those of you that are technologically savvy and get on the internet, you can go on the blogs and all that other stuff, and know about the chaos that exists now with college athletics in particular. Chaos in terms of schools moving from one conference to another. It's almost like free agency in sports, where players move from one team to another. We got schools that are moving from conference to conference. We've had a 3 or 4 year period of time of some unprecedented bad news in terms of some of these scandals, and Syracuse University and Penn State and Southern Cal and North Carolina. And again, you need a scorecard to keep up with all this stuff. And we as the leaders, administrators, senior administrators, officials at the conference level and the NCAA level, our coaches, et cetera, we have not done the kind of job that we need to do in defining what our value is to our respective institutions. And absent that clear definition, we then get defined by either our critics, or we get defined by those scandals, those things that create the sensational headlines, and et cetera. So I challenge our staff, I challenge the young people for whom I serve as a mentor. I challenge prospective employees that come to the university, to come to Charlottesville to seek employment opportunities or career advice, et cetera, to think about their own elevator speech. That is, what is it that they see as the added value of a top-performing sports program to its institution, to the university or to the university community? So because we haven't done it ourselves enough, because we haven't done it ourselves in an effective way, those people that either don't understand what we do, those people that don't respect what we do, tend to then define us. And as I said, we get defined then by the scandals, by the bad stuff. The student athletes that make bad decisions, the staff members, the high profile coaches that do crazy things, that get themselves and their names and their institutions in the news. So the question then becomes, and I ask this question of many prospective employees, mentees, young people that are looking to get into either coaching or college administrative work. The question is something like this: why is it important for the University of Virginia, for Notre Dame, Stanford, Vanderbilt, Florida State, you name the school, why is it important for any of our schools to have a top-performing intercollegiate sports program? What is the added value that comes to the institution, that comes to that university community, by having a top-performing sports program? And the answers that I get many times are focused on these qualities, these characteristics. We teach perseverance, hard work, teamwork, dedication, that sort of thing. And I said, okay, that's good. My question was related to the institution. You're talking about the value to the individuals. And all those things that you said are right. But how does the institution, how does the University of Virginia benefit by having a top-performing sports program? And then I give whomever I might be speaking at that point in time the opportunity to think through it a little bit. Well, anyway, there is an answer. At least I have my own elevator speech. And the question of why is it important? There are two things that we do at the University of Virginia in the athletics department better than anywhere else at the institution. Number one, we bring people together. And number two, we develop relationships. Now, I admit that it's not the most important thing that happens at the University of Virginia. Teaching and learning and research, all those things are far more important than the games that we play. But when you think about the opportunity that we have to be that venue through which unlimited exposure for the university occurs, it does count for something. It counts for a great deal, as a matter of fact. Think about, if you will, over the course of an academic year, at the University of Virginia, we will host literally 100 and maybe 30 athletic events. And as a result of that number of events, literally hundreds of thousands of people will gravitate to the grounds to either celebrate their affinity and love for sports or the university or for this area, Central Virginia. All right? Hundreds of thousands of people over the course of an academic year are going to congregate at the University of Virginia because of what we're doing with the athletics program. All right? So that's part of bringing people together. But also think about the millions of eyeballs that are going to be fixed on a TV screen at 2:15 on Friday to watch an NCAA basketball game, or that were fixed on the TV screen on December 31 for the Chick-fil-A Bowl, or that were fixed on that TV screen Memorial Day Monday when the men's lacrosse team was playing for the national championship. And then the video streaming, those that will watch it and get access to those events as a result of computer technology, video streaming, etc. We have the unusual, the unique ability to bring millions of people together because of their love for the University of Virginia and, yes, their love for sports. Okay, so that's one dimension. And then secondly, we can develop relationships with those people that we're bringing together. And just think about a beautiful fall Saturday at Scott Stadium, 60,000 people, where there are students, there are faculty, there are university staff, there are alums, there are corporate sponsors, there are the diverse group that is brought together as a result of this athletic event, okay? And our unique ability to then put the parent of a student athlete together with a faculty member, to put a faculty member together with a corporate sponsor that happens to be at the event. And you can look at any number of combinations of the ability that we have as a result of bringing people together to develop the kinds of relationships that bring great value to the university and exposure and recognition to the university, and yes, to the people that attend these events. So at a time when we are under intense scrutiny and intense criticism in college athletics, and some of it is deserved, you know, we have not done all the things that we need to do in terms of being good stewards. We, as the leaders, need to let the world know why we are relevant and why and how we bring added value to the institution and to you and others that live here, work here, visit here over the course of an academic year. So you have your own elevator speech now, and you can put that together in your own way. So that's number one. Why is it important? I've had the opportunity over the course of the last 3 months to speak to a number of very different groups, but I've spoken about the same theme. And this does connect a little bit to this idea of defining ourselves and why we're relevant, et cetera. Back in January, I was asked to speak to the American Football Coaches Association. This is the association of college football coaches, assistant coaches, and head coaches. And I was asked to speak to a group of primarily assistant coaches on our role as the leaders, our role as in fact role models. And I was asked to provide something along the lines of an inspirational message in terms of professionalism and people thinking about their careers, thinking about what it is that they do to develop young people, to mentor, to teach and educate young people, etc. And I was told to be candid and to be realistic. So in thinking about this presentation, I started to think about some of these negative things that have happened over the course of the last several years that have painted a pretty cynical picture about college athletics. And I talked about some of those situations before. And I also started to think about the fact that I'm at a stage of my career that I'm not going to be doing this in X number of years. So there's going to be a handing of the baton to a new generation of coach, a new generation of administrator. So I take very seriously the fact that I might be able to play at least a small role in our next generation of leaders thinking about the profession, thinking about intercollegiate athletics, coaches, administrators, etc. So the topic of my presentation that day was, we need to get our S-H-I blank together. Okay? And I used it in the form of a PowerPoint, and I went through a series of words in the acronym, S-H-I blank. Okay? S. Who would like to guess at what they think the S is? I used the word once already. Service is great. Yeah. I had a different word in mind, though. Stewardship. Stewardship. And that stewardship to me is the genuine care that one has for something of value. And I asked these coaches to think about this enterprise, intercollegiate athletics, as a jewel, as something that's really important. It is important to the American culture, college sports, a football Saturday, and March Madness. I mean, these are things that are ingrained in our experience, many of us that watch sports. So S and S-H-I blank is stewardship. Okay? Stewardship. How about H? What would you say the H would be? Pardon me?
Heart.
Heart, that's good.
Health.
Health, okay, all very good.
Honor,
excellent. My H, in terms of getting our S-H-I blank together, is humility. Humility. And to me, humility is basically thinking of oneself less. And there's a famous quote that, humility is not thinking less of oneself, but thinking of oneself less. Okay? Humility. And think about some of these high-profile coaches. I won't name names or schools or anything else, but think about some of these coaches that have gotten themselves into a little bit of trouble in the past few years. Okay? Where they have kind of let the celebrity get in front of them. And they become more important than the sport. They become more important than the institution. We've got to get away from that. What we do is about our institutions and about our students and our student athletes. So humility to me is kind of dialing that focus off of ourselves, off of us as leaders, and back on our institutions, shining that light on the institutions and our student athletes. Okay, again, getting our S-H-I blank together, I. Integrity, absolutely. I don't even need to tell you what integrity is all about. Okay, and then the last letter. Okay, who has a word? Trust?
Teamwork?
What's that? That last letter is P. Get your ship together. Professionalism. Professionalism. But there's another good P, and that's purpose. Professionalism and purpose. And there's nothing more important to me than the manner in which each and every one of us represents our programs, represents our institution, and the purpose of the work that we do. The work that we do with young people, developing young people that represent a great institution. Yeah, teamwork, trust, and all that. But it's get your ship together. And I had a group, in fact, Charlie mentioned my three children. Two daughters bookend a son. Oldest is a daughter, Erica, who's a pediatric nurse. Younger daughter, the youngest of our children, is a third-year nursing student at the university, and then our son's in the middle. He's in the family business. He's a sports administration major, just graduated from Radford in graduate school at VCU. And he asked me, or his professor asked me to come and speak to their class a couple, about 2 weeks ago. And as we were going through this thing, I could see the students, and they were making notes and everything else, and they were trying to get ahead of me. So they had S-H-I, and I just knew what they had down there for that last letter. And I was, again, I challenged them to come up with that last letter. But I think that that message of getting our ship together is so very important when I think about the future of athletics. And again, when I start to think about the fact that I'm handing the baton off, you know, a couple of years, I'm not sure when it is. And I want to see this thing continue to go as well as it has gone, particularly as well as it's gone here at the University of Virginia over the past 10 years or so. But I want to see it continue to go as it has globally. Because from my point of view, there's no more significant experience than being a part of a team. And whether you look at a team in terms of an athletic team, an organization, a business, a family, so much of our experiences relate to teams and working with other people. And I think that the ability that we have in intercollegiate sport to show the great things about people working together, people of diverse backgrounds working together for common goals, there's nothing like it. The only experience better than being a part of a team is being a parent, personally. There's nothing like being on. The one thing that I regret right now is that I don't get a chance to lace them up, put the uniform on, and go out there with a group of guys like I did, you know, 40 years ago when I was playing ball. I mean, I miss that. That's why I do what I do now, because I get a chance to be a part of a team, not as a participant, but as somebody that supports young people that are participating. So, why don't I conclude my remarks at that? Open it up for the kinds of things that you feel as though may be important for you to hear about, and we'll take maybe another 20 minutes or so for questions and answers. Yes?
So thanks. But you talked about defining the value of big-time athletics programs in the context of an important university like Virginia. And you said that that athletics often needs to define better. It's the elevator speech thing. You need to ask talk about what you're really contributing. When you all at the University of Virginia are recruiting prospective student athletes, are you much more in the mode of thinking about the value that they get being at a place like Virginia plus the athletics after they graduate from here? After all, most of them are not going to be professional players and so forth and so on. I think Virginia could probably make that case much more effectively than many schools. How much does that play into your thinking?
Well, it plays a big role in the presentation of the university by our coaches, by our administrators, by anybody that might be speaking about the university, but we're talking about prospective student athletes. Here's the distressing thing. Candidly, not enough kids really care. All right? So to them, what's more important is how many times you're going to be on TV, what bowl games you've gone, how many times you've been to the NCAA tournament. Here's one that's going to knock your socks off, but this is absolutely true. And this is one of the things that got me out of coaching. What kind of shoes you wear? Absolutely. And I'll tell you And I can't remember the name of the book right now. Soul Influence, S-O-L-E, Soul Influence. If you go to the library and they happen to have that, read it. My last year of coaching was the academic year 1989-1990. I had returned to the University of Virginia. Terry Holland and I worked together. And what was going on at the time was that there were people that had inserted themselves into the recruiting process of prospective student athletes that had no business being in the picture. So when I first got into coaching right out of college in 1973, we recruited the prospective student, the family, the high school coach, and the people at the school. Okay? Yeah. So, I mean, those were the people that we recruited. And if we could do a good job recruiting the prospect, the parents, or the adults in that person's life, the high school coach, guidance counselor, whatever, we knew that we had a legitimate shot at getting the kid. As college recruiting started to evolve through the early 80s and the mid-80s, AAU and non-scholastic basketball became actually more important than high school basketball. So you had these kids that were playing all over the country all year round. These teams that they were playing on were subsidized and are still being subsidized by shoe companies. All right? And I'll never forget, and I won't name the prospect's name, we were recruiting a young man, would have been a perfect fit for the University of Virginia, good student. We had a need for a player at his position, and I had personally invested a lot of my time recruiting him, go in to make the pitch for him coming to visit the University of Virginia. And says, well, coach, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go to a Nike school. At the time, we were wearing Reebok. And the reason was because as he became an 8th, 9th, 10th grader, he was playing on an AAU team that was sponsored by Nike. And he felt then a loyalty, and his AAU coach was letting him know that he had loyalty to Nike. And so after this happened a couple times, I said, rather than get bitter and be an angry old man at some point, I just don't want to do this anymore. I used to love recruiting, absolutely love recruiting. Go on the road, I'd stay on the road 2 weeks at a time. That was nothing. And then as kids started to focus more on shoes, TV, what color uniforms, and were you going to wear, you know, jazzy uniforms, this and that and the other. They weren't asking questions about the academic programs and graduation rates and where, you know, what kind of trips are you going to make, what tournaments are you going to play in. Yeah. So, yeah, we spend a lot of time focusing on that, providing material. That's a part of every coach's recruiting pitch. But the bottom line is it doesn't resonate with a lot of kids, unfortunately.
As the wife of a 30-year professor at university, he had friends who would teach, who taught at Kentucky. If they didn't give the grades necessary to the players, they lost their jobs. How is it that the University of Virginia is a team that my husband always says, well, one of the reasons why those other teams win is because they don't have the academic standards for their student athletes that we do? How do we maintain that?
Well, I think that, and this is not only true for the university as a whole, but I would say that it is one of the things that's part of my blueprint in leadership, which is hiring really, really good people. If you hire good people, if they're smart, if they're loyal, particularly if they're smarter than me, and that's, you know, that's not a very high bar. I'm teasing. I believe that you hire people of integrity, people of humility, some of the things that we talked about in getting our ship together. And when you hire good people, they, in fact, are going to attract similarly talented and good people, people of character. So I would say that the university has had a history of great leadership in bringing top-notch administrators and top-notch faculty that really embraced the traditions and culture of the university. And there's no doubt that over the years, the university has evolved. You know, it's a much different institution than it was physically, particularly in 76 when I came here. It's a different school because it's bigger. It's a different and better school because it's more diverse, more women, more ethnic minorities. I mean, there's just more of everything. But at the foundation of that is that the university has always hired really top-notch people. And I think as it relates to the faculty, people that are absolutely dedicated to their students. And one of the things that I have noticed in my time, and I see it from the athletics perspective, more often than not, when the university admits a student and that student comes to the university, the university embraces that as our student, our collectively student. It's not Mike London's kid, or it's not, you know, just some kid who's the son or daughter of an alumnus or something. All these are our students, and as we have developed this theme, if you will, of thinking of all these students as our students, we take great pride in what they do. I take great pride in the student athletes, 670 or so student athletes, but I go on grounds once or twice a week, and I just marvel. I just walk around, and I just feel good watching these young people do the things that they do in and out of the classroom. We just take great pride in students and embrace them as our own. So,
How much time do they spend with tutors?
The student athletes, in particular, every student athlete, his or her first year, is required to attend study hall, and that's usually about an hour and a half a night, Monday through Thursday. Now, we have gotten away, here's something you may find interesting. We've gotten away from study halls where you come in at 7, you sit around, you do some work, you goof around until 9 o'clock because 9 o'clock is the end of study hall. It's not productive. Isn't it better in terms of motivation to say, okay, we start at 7, and when you get your work done, you leave? Just think about how eager they are to get those assignments done. Instead of, okay, well, you know you're going to be here until 9 o'clock, and they do an hour of work, and then they sit around and, you know, talk, sleep, whatever the case may be. So we have developed at the University of Virginia about 5 or 6 years ago what we call a task-based study hall. You come in every day, and with your academic coordinator, your academic advisor, you develop a list of the things that you're going to accomplish that you need to based on your courses, what papers, what exams, et cetera, et cetera. And if you have 3 or 4 tests, once you get them done, you're done for the evening. A couple hours a night, potentially. Now, we do have some students that will drop in during the day and spend time with their academic coordinator, okay? But I would say on average, you know, they average maybe 3 hours of classes a day, and they probably have another 2.5 hours that they're either in study hall and or meeting with tutors, a dean, a mentor, or somebody else.
I noted in your resume that you've been at some of the Ivy League schools. I mean, you studied at Penn and you worked at Yale. Is there much of a difference in the relationship between the Ivy League teams and athletic departments and their programs to the university as opposed to what's going on at University of Virginia?
Yes, and I would say that the biggest difference would be in resources. That, first of all, the Ivy schools don't offer scholarships, so all of the aid that's available to students is institutional aid that is given on a need-based basis only. So a student that's very needy gets the whole financial package, a student whose parents own multi-million dollar businesses or lawyers, doctors, et cetera, are paying their own. So from the standpoint of resources, that would be one element of it. In terms of facilities, our facilities would dwarf all the Ivy schools in terms of the size, the scope, the accommodations of the different athletics facilities, the venues, et cetera. Their athletic events are not as oriented toward trying to drive attendance as you would see in most of the BCS, the large conferences around the country. And that's a function of TV. So, it's kind of these dominoes fall. The resources come from attendance, resources come from television contracts, resources come from philanthropy, et cetera. That would be the differentiation between Virginia, North Carolina, and the Ivy schools, Penn, Princeton, Harvard, et cetera.
I'm wondering if you could say anything that would change my impression that the ACC purposely destroyed the Big East for the advantage of television markets.
Let me make, your premise is that the ACC purposely destroyed the Big East? Mm-hmm. Well, this is what I can share with you, and this is how I would answer the question. If you called the president or the athletics director at Rutgers University, the University of Connecticut, or any of the other Big East schools that play 1A or BCS football, ask any of those representatives if they would want to be in the ACC, I would tell you that they would walk from their respective campuses to Greensboro to make that request. So to feel that the ACC raided and purposely raided the other conference, there was and there is a tremendous amount of interest in schools leaving to come to the ACC, okay? So there was an interest in the ACC in protecting itself in terms of its future. In looking at the future, the ACC knew that everything that was going on around us was oriented toward change and expansion. So strategically, we could sit there and be gobbled up by all the conferences around us, or look at those schools that might be like-minded and be a fit and that had an interest in coming to the ACC. And in both 2004, whatever the year was, and recently in November, actually October of 2011, we made decisions. We didn't expand and bring in University of Pittsburgh and Syracuse University kicking and screaming. They were anxious to come to the ACC. If you talk to anybody that is a Virginia Tech fan, they will tell you how many years they have desired to be in the ACC. I don't know if I can tell you anything more than that.
It's just coincidental that you picked up the Miami, New York, and Boston TV markets.
Oh, no, it's not. No, that's not coincidence. Absolutely not.
I want to thank you for what you've done for the Department of Athletics at UVA. I think it's in the best shape it's been. We've been living here since 1970, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Across the board. As are you, I'm a parent of two daughters and a son, and they've played athletics and also done well academically. My oldest child, who has always enjoyed pulling her papa's chain frequently, I don't know if that happens in your family, but anyway, she has always argued with me. I'm an ex or aging or aged jock. Anyway, she's always pulled my chain about the situation of why should the two or three revenue athletics, football, basketball, and to some degree now, fortunately, baseball, why should their coaches, number one, be paid so much, and why should tickets and so forth, why should that cost so much? And my elevator response with extra has been, because it pays for all the other athletics, softball, field hockey, et cetera, lacrosse. And I'd like to hear your elevator speech so I can take that back to her.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
There is no question that there are two net revenue producers in intercollegiate sport and in at schools around the country, and there may be one or two other sports programs that come close. So football and basketball, they are revenue producers at every school, just about every Division I school. And the reason is because of television and television revenue. That's the reason, okay? And also tickets, et cetera, et cetera. At some schools, you may have baseball that's a net, again, net revenue producer, soccer, lacrosse, ice hockey at some schools is a net revenue producer in some of the Big Ten schools, et cetera. But for the revenue that's generated by football and basketball and the goodwill that's generated by your football programs and basketball programs, the other sports wouldn't exist unless there was somebody that came along and was able to endow the sports program. Endowing a sports program, an Olympic sports program, if you will, is several million dollars when you look at scholarships, when you look at salaries, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, indeed, football and basketball fund the entire 25-sport program at the University of Virginia. We're fortunate that we have very good lacrosse, very good baseball, very good soccer, and they bring in some revenue, although it's not net revenue when you look at expenses as well as revenues. The other part of it about paying coaches, we for a very long period of time operated a program on the cheap, if you will, okay, candidly. If you went back to pre 2000, just as an example, at that time we had 24 sports. Out of the 24 sports, eight of those were fully funded to the NCAA maximum. That is in only eight sports were we able to fund the full complement of NCAA scholarships, okay? The other 16 sports had partial, you know, they're 70% funded, 80% funded. And what that meant was that the coaches in swimming and tennis and baseball and some of the other sports could not go out and build a roster with scholarship athletes. They could build it with a combination of scholarship athletes and walk-ons and that sort of thing, but they really weren't able to build a program that had depth and that had quality, okay? But the other thing was that pre-2000, we had a number of sports that either didn't have full-time head coaches and or full-time assistant coaches. So take the women's tennis and men's tennis. We had part-time head coaches. The assistant coaches were either part-time or volunteers. So they would work a full-time job and then at 3 o'clock come to University Hall, work their team out, and then for those young assistant coaches that weren't full-time, they would work another job at night. So they were limited in terms of what they could do from a professional development standpoint, watching film and, you know, going to clinics and that sort of thing. They were limited in terms of what they could do as far as recruiting. Again, having a full-time job and then moonlighting and then squeezing coaching responsibilities in for a couple hours. So the fact that we, in 2001, developed a strategic plan which basically required that we invest in facilities and invest in people. Investing in people meant that we were going to fully fund scholarships, and then number two, we were going to develop a professional coaching staff. We weren't going to be able to achieve success, top 10 success across the board, by having people that maybe taught school or sold insurance by day and then spent a couple hours with the student athletes in the afternoon. So we made that transition of going to full-time professional coaching staff, being much more sophisticated and discerning in terms of what are the characteristics that might allow somebody to come to the University of Virginia, coach a varsity sport, and be successful. If you looked at our salary structure at the University of Virginia compared to the Texases, Nebraskas, Floridas, and Ohio states of the world, you would say, boy, they're getting great value for what they pay. And we pay good salaries, but University of Texas, Ohio State are programs with budgets in excess of $120 million. And we are competing at the University of Virginia and competing very successfully, and our budget's about $70 million. So it's not about having to pay top dollar, although we pay well. It's not about having the most palatial facilities, but we have good facilities, quality facilities that fit the University of Virginia. But we couldn't do it, and we weren't doing it until that time that we really got serious. And the university as a whole, starting with the president and the board of visitors, said, okay, this is what we want. Can you develop that plan for developing a top performing, consistently performing top 10 program? And it was going to take that kind of investment in facilities and people, as I articulated before. So hopefully that answers your question. It's not an elevator speech. It's a lecture, probably, more so. But that's really what it took.
First, I apologize for being late, but you drew a pretty good-sized crowd. I kept driving around trying to find a parking place. That's one of the main reasons I was late.
Did you find one?
I found one.
Okay.
I'm not parked in the middle of the street. The first thing I want to say is that I'm a lifelong member of this community here in Charlottesville. This is my home. And I am very...
Former mayor.
Well, there are a lot of those around. I am and have been very impressed with you and what I think you're doing at the university, and particularly with the coaches and the people that work with the programs. Now, this doesn't mean that I'm a constant visitor at the athletic programs. I don't have the time to do that. But I have friends who tell me about the people. And I think that as I hear about coaches, I'm really impressed, because I think they want to win, yes. But that's not the most important thing. They want to do a great job for the kids in the program, for people who go to the games, and so forth. And just as a final remark, and a little levity, I'm very impressed with the women's basketball coach. And when she came, soon after she came, she invited those of us who have season tickets, and those are not terribly expensive, by the way, to come to a luncheon. And we were there, and she was talking and so on. And as some of you may not know, she's very tall and thin, and good looking, too. Someone, a lady in the audience, asked, "Aren't you right thin?" And the coach, without breaking stride at all, looked up and down like this. And she said, "I guess you're right." And then she laughed, and she said, "I know what you mean, thin in number of players." And that immediately made me think she's going to be a great coach.
Yeah. Well, if you give me 5 minutes, Charlie, I'd like to talk about some of these coaches, because I think that there are some great stories. And I believe it'll be even more ammunition for why these people have come here, why we pay them well, and why they stay here. But as a former mayor, we hold a lot in common. And I say this often, the best part about my job is I get a lot of free advice. And I bet as mayor you got a lot of free advice. Yep. So on Mondays, following a home football game or the day after a home basketball game, my inbox on my email is filled with advice, free advice, great advice about parking, traffic, concessions, recruiting, offense, defense, substitutions, marching band, world peace, inflation, taxes. That's a great part because people really care. And that's what makes my job special. Let me tell you a couple quick stories about some of these coaches who are just unbelievable. Let me start with Kim Llewellyn. And some of these names may not be household names, but Kim Llewellyn is our women's golf coach. She was hired, I won't remember the years and everything, but she was hired as a former head coach at North Carolina Wilmington, I believe it was, or East Carolina University. Graduate of University of North Carolina. We don't show any bias against Tar Heels when they're really good and smart. We have a couple Hokies on our staff that are really good and real smart. But anyway, Coach Llewellyn came to the University of Virginia to take over as the second coach of our women's golf program maybe four or five years ago. An interesting thing, though, happened after about year two or three. And the interesting thing that happened was that Coach Llewellyn's alma mater, the University of North Carolina's head women's coaching job opened. And I'm thinking to myself, goodness gracious, we just hired a couple years ago. Now we got to do another search. And so I called her in. And, said, Kim, I understand the University of North Carolina job is open, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of hemmed and hawed a little bit. And she had this strange look on her face, like, what are you talking about? And I said, they've called. They asked for permission to talk to you. And, I'm not going to stand in your way if it's important to you to go back to your office. She says, I came here to coach University of Virginia. I'm a Cavalier. I'm not going anywhere. She wouldn't interview at her alma mater, okay? Had an opportunity to make more money, go back home, and wouldn't even, she came here for the right reason, okay? Brian O'Connor, baseball coach. Came to us in 2003, something like that. He had been the associate head coach at the University of Notre Dame. All of about 32 years old or something like that, and there was a lot of public sentiment to hire this person or that person, et cetera, et cetera. First time I met Brian O'Connor, and I told this story on the day that he was announced as our new head coach. So this isn't something I'm making up now with revisionist history. I said it on the day that he was announced as our new head coach, that within 5 minutes of meeting him, at an airport hotel conference room at the Cincinnati airport, I knew that he was going to be our head coach. And I knew that he was going to be successful. This guy had it. I mean, there was just something about him that said, he's the real deal. He comes to the University of Virginia, immediately turns the program around. We go from a program that prior to him coming to us was 27 and 34 or something like that. And I think he pops about 42 or 43 wins his first year. And a gentleman by the name of Hal Baird, who is a legendary baseball coach at Auburn University, calls me and says, Craig, our job here at Auburn is open. And boy, I really like the job that your new young head coach up there has done. Can we have permission to talk to him? I said, Hal, let me talk to Brian first, and either I will call you back or Brian will call you back within 24 hours. And he said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do boom, boom. Basically, in 25 words or less, they were going to triple his compensation, okay? Triple his compensation. He said, we will have the jet in Charlottesville tomorrow to pick Brian and his wife up. Or whenever it's convenient for him. So call Brian. Brian, I need to talk to you. We meet the next day. So I sit down and talk to him and said, look, Here's the situation. Auburn University, absolutely wonderful baseball program. They're interested in you. And before I could get another word out, he said, stop. He said, you gave me an opportunity. 32 years old, you gave me an opportunity. We've won a lot of games this year, but you didn't bring me here to win a lot of games. You brought me here to develop the program and to win championships. I'm not going anywhere. I said, but Brian, you got to think about your family. He said, no. You gave me a chance, and I'm not going anywhere because of what you did for me. The next year, University of Florida called. The year after that, Notre Dame called. The guy has never even flinched at his commitment to this institution and to this department and to the program and his players. And again, if you follow this kind of stuff, we were in the out the College World Series last year, and the University of Nebraska opened up. And I'm thinking to myself, this is it. This is, because he's from Council Bluff, Iowa, 45-minute drive, his family's there and everything else. And I'm thinking to myself, he's gone. And Nebraska can pay just a ton of money. And there were a bunch of jobs open at the time. Tennessee was open. And these baseball jobs are paying $750,000 and, you know, that sort of thing. Brian O'Connor's not making anywhere near that kind of money. Never once talked to Nebraska, wouldn't talk to Tennessee. And we did some things to make it more attractive for him to stay here. But he's here for the right reasons. Okay? And Joanne Boyle, just a wonderful, wonderful addition to this program. And if you could have been with me on Monday night in that locker room when that team found out that they were not invited to the tournament, to the NCAA tournament, the poise, the love, the professionalism that she demonstrated in addressing that team in the midst of just a bitter, bitter disappointment and a kick to the gut. You know, again, I'm emotional when I think about this young woman as an educator and as a leader of young women, off the chart. And here's another one that she's here for the right reasons. And I think that the results of the kind of work that she does, the results of the kind of person that she is, are coming through with what you see on the court. So I apologize for getting emotional, but I get to work with these people every single day. And so you know, it's just fun being around them. Mike London, Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett had his choice of jobs in the year before he came to the University of Virginia, turned down Indiana University, turned down Marquette University, didn't want to interview at Stanford University, okay? But there was something here at the University of Virginia that he saw as being aligned with his values and where he wanted to be with a family. So we're really fortunate with the kinds of people that this university attracts. And it goes back to the question that was asked before about, you know, the professors and, you know, what makes them special. And that's a snapshot of what makes those people that are leading these sports programs something really, really unique and special. They're treasures. One more. Two more. Sue has a chance.
You want to? Hi. I'm going to ask a question. It might not be the smartest one, but I'm going to ask it. Okay. There's a long, long bench at John Paul Arena, and there are 10 basketball players sitting on. There are 10 basketball players sitting on that very long bench. And the game is going to start in a few minutes. And the ESPN announcer says, There are 7 scholarship players. Now, obviously, then there are 3 private pay.
There are 3 what? I'm sorry.
If you have 7 scholarship programs, the other 3 basketball players are private pay?
They are what we call walk-ons. They are non-scholarship players.
Okay. Who provides these scholarships? Do you have help from, like, Nike or anyone, or does all the scholarships come from UVA?
They're non-scholarship. Their parents pay for them, or they could have funding through Access UVA. I'm sorry. For those scholarship players, oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm sorry. These scholarships are all provided by the Virginia Athletics Foundation. So over the course of the past academic year, the foundation raised about $14 or $15 million. Most of that was allocated for the out of 670 student athletes, there are probably 400 or so that get a full or partial scholarship. All that money is raised by the Athletics Foundation. Now, students that are not scholarship, and I thought that, I apologize because I thought that's what you were asking, they could get financial aid support through the university, and the university's all Access UVA program. There are other merit-type scholarships unrelated to athletics ability that some students and some student-athletes get. But those that are on athletic grant aid, they come from the Athletic Foundation.
So why are they called walk-ins?
Why are the others called walk-ons?
Yeah.
Because they are non-scholarship, and many times they come to the institution not with intentions to play sports. So they're at the University of Virginia. In the case of men's basketball, there's a point early in the academic year where the coach will look at his or her roster, and the women's basketball, the same thing. You'd like to have a roster in basketball of about 12 to 14, maybe 15 players total. Men's basketball only has 13 scholarships. Women's basketball has 15 scholarships. So typically, around late September, the coaches will put out a notice. Anybody that's played high school basketball, you're interested in trying out for the varsity program, trials will be on September 30th at 2 o'clock. And they might pick a number of people from those tryouts to become varsity players. How long have you been in Charlottesville?
5 years.
5 years, okay. For those of you that have been around as long as Charlie and me, and there are a few of you, I know that, we've had a number of very, very successful, quote, walk-on players who have ultimately then earned their way into a scholarship. Kenton Edlin was a young man that played for a Final Four team in the early 80s. He came to the university without desires to play varsity basketball. He actually was playing junior varsity basketball. We had a couple of injuries. We needed a number of additional players just to have practice every day. Kenton was about 6'7" tall and a pretty decent junior varsity player, but he could defend like crazy, and he was just a wonderful, wonderful young man. He gets appointed, gets assigned to the varsity program, and then his last 2 years is a varsity scholarship athlete. Happens in football a great deal, too. So the walk-on terminology is that they come from a non-recruited background many times. They're at the institution, and then they, quote, walk on to the varsity sports program.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, last question. You guys have been a great audience, and these are great questions, by the way.
I'm lucky to be able to ask the last question and also send you on your way. I understand now why we have the caliber of coaches that we have at UVA. And I guarantee that if I had the skill, I'd want to stay with you as well.
Oh, it's me?
Yes. No. I think so.
We have a great, we have a great university.
So. My question is, are you grooming someone? Because you alluded to the fact that in the next how many years you will probably retire or move on to something else, are you grooming someone to fill your unfillable shoes?
That is a wonderful question. And one of the reasons I believe that we have become successful in our sports program is because we don't wait until the roof blows off before we start to maintain it. All right, so for every one of our coaching positions, we have a list of potential candidates. Some names will move off because they may go to other schools. Some names will move on because they have ascended from an assistant coach to a head coach at a smaller school and they have talent, et cetera, et cetera. But we have this ever-evolving list of people from a coaching standpoint. And also there is an ever-evolving list of administrators. I, as part of my professional life, participate with the NCAA on a number of leadership development programs, do a lot of speaking around the country on identifying, selecting, and training talented coaches and administrators. But in part, it's not just that I'm a great guy and I love to do this. I'm doing it for selfish reasons because it gives me access to these talented, aspiring administrators or coaches. When I was on the basketball committee, boy, it was great to be involved with that. But selfishly, it gave me the opportunity to watch over the course of a given year 64 head coaches work with their teams. So, you know who the good coaches are in terms of their records and everything else, but to watch them on the court, how do they interact with their teams? How do they interact with their assistant coaches? How they interact with their team managers and so forth? For 5 years, I had a chance to see 64 of the best coaches every year. That's developing that list. So it's a long-winded way of saying that, yes, there is a transition plan that I have in mind. Now, whether that's the same transition plan that the president would have is a different matter. But I will say that I have, at the University of Virginia, the very best executive associate, number two person in the country, bar none. John Oliver is better than 60% of the sitting athletics directors in the country. He's been with me since day one. As I look at our program and the development of our program, and as much as I give credit to those great coaches and the great coaches that have recruited these unbelievable people, it's John and the work that he has done from a business standpoint, in terms of the facilities development. Whether or not John is here or whether John goes off to another job at some point in time, I don't know. But we have a great person in John, and there are half a dozen other tremendous people that I think would also be good fits. But don't push me out the door quite yet. I still got. onto the plane. But I appreciate that question. That decision is a presidential decision. Hopefully, the relationship with Terry will continue to be a great one, and she will ask me what my thoughts are, and I will share them and share the candid observations I have. And there are some wonderful people out there, and we've got one of the very best that sits alongside of me every day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Go Hoos!
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.